This is Sports Talk with Phil Kornblut, Chris Bergen, and Pat Daniel. Sports Talk is heard across the state on radio affiliates of the Sports Talk Media Network and is streaming live on sportstalksc.com, as well as Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. The South Carolina Education Lottery lucky number to call in is 888-898-2525. That's 888-898-2525. Now, here are Phil, Chris, and Pat with tonight's edition of Sports Talk.
All right, good evening, everybody. Welcome to Sports Talk on the Sports Talk Media Network. It's great to have you with us. Hope you had a great weekend. Man, what a weekend it was. Where do you want to start? SEC women's basketball, USC Clemson men's basketball over the weekend, college baseball, league play beginning in the ACC, league play beginning this week in the SEC, race out at Phoenix and NASCAR yesterday. Got so much to cover with the SEC and ACC men's basketball tournaments beginning this week. Looking forward to bringing all that to you. But I guess the talk of the weekend and carrying on over to today, that South Carolina LSU women's SEC championship game yesterday in Greenville. South Carolina women get it done once again with Dawn Staley and company, taking yet another championship trophy back to Columbia. And just what can you say about that greatness that they are experiencing right now? There's just no other way to put it. It's just greatness on the part of the USC women's basketball team. Forget all the other sideshow stuff that went on yesterday. That team just finds a way to win no matter what the opponent might throw at them. And even when they're not playing at their best and they have their struggles, it seems like they find a way to dig down and pull out a victory. And when you look at what's left moving forward in the NCAA tournament, I mean, seriously, is there anyone out there that is going to push this USC women's basketball team when it comes to winning the national championship? And I mean, obviously, Iowa is going to be sitting there somewhere, and they're going to have to probably cross that bridge. National semifinals, I would imagine. But otherwise, I mean, it does not look like Connecticut can be a factor. Does not really, well, you know, we shouldn't forget what happened on Saturday. They shot heard around college football, college basketball world. The unbelievable three-pointer by Cardoso. But, you know, you give them credit for having a play. You give them credit for having an idea about what to do. Dawn Staley had a play ready, figuring they were going to let Cardoso sit outside and shoot it because she doesn't shoot threes. It was only the second time in her life she's taken a three-pointer in a college basketball game. Why would you cover her? And they didn't cover her. And you know what? It wasn't a freak shot. You know, it wasn't like she just threw it up and it banked in. She turned, she faced up, she had good form, she shot it perfectly, and bang, it went down. And, I mean, you just have to tip your cap to South Carolina for its current greatness in its women's basketball program. When you measure them against current teams, there is nobody to measure them against right now. Iowa, maybe. We'll see. But, you know, they're measuring themselves now against history. I mean, against history, the greatest women's teams of all time. And eventually, if they keep on winning, this winning streak, if it continues to grow, if they run through this tournament and then go through another undefeated regular season next year, I mean, you're talking about making a run at one of the all-time great records, the UCLA all-time winning streak. So that's a bit down the road, but you just have to take a step back. If you're a South Carolina fan, you just have to take a step back and appreciate the moment with what this team and what that coaching staff has been able to do in putting this team together and knowing that every night out they're going to get the absolute best shot from the other team because you're the number one team in the country, that everybody's coming at you, and to respond night in and night out, especially in a year where there weren't a lot of really good teams in the SEC for them to get excited about. I mean, the names on the jersey were one thing, but really the other SEC teams were pretty much hollow shells of themselves. I mean, Tennessee's gotten better, and they did put up a fight the other day. Of course, LSU is the real deal, and that'll be a war every time those two teams meet. But really, Mississippi State's not where they used to be. Kentucky's not where they used to be. There wasn't a whole lot of competition. My point is, game in and game out, this team did not take their eye off the target, and they took care of their business. If they could beat a team by 50, they did. If they had to beat a team by 10, they did. So, quite the weekend in Greenville to talk about. South Carolina men, they go on the road. They get a heck of a win against Mississippi State. 25 wins on the season. Lamont Paris is named the SEC Coach of the Year today, and that was a no-brainer. The Clemson men, well, they continued with their up-and-down kind of play. Just when you think the Tigers are getting it together, you know, they go out once again, and they turn in a less than stellar performance by their standards, and they take a loss at Wake Forest. I don't think it's going to impact their NCAA tournament positioning. Certainly the two experts that I look at, Jerry Palm and Lenardi, still have Clemson firmly in the field, so that was not a destructive loss for them at Wake Forest by any means. The way the Tigers have just been playing so up and down here of late, you got to have a little bit of concern about them going into postseason play. Be nice for them to win a couple of games in Washington and make some noise there. So we've got all that. Big weekends for USC Clemson baseball as they swept their opponents. Coastal Carolina had a good weekend. College of Charleston basketball playing tonight in the semifinals of the CAA, taking on Towson as they seek to go back-to-back and winning that tournament. And so we got all that to talk about. And our phone number, 888-898-2525, 888-898-2525. That is the South Carolina Education Lottery lucky number for you. Coming up at 7:05, BJ Mack's dad, Brian Mack, is going to join us. He wants to talk about the Gamecock basketball team this season, what the season has been like for his son fitting in with the Gamecocks and where he thinks they're going to go here moving forward. So he'll join us 7:05. 7:35, Coach Jim Thoman, just a bit outside. He'll take a closer look at the weekend college baseball here in South Carolina. Chris Bergen is with us from the Bergie Palace, and Matt Smith is with us as well from the Smitty Castle in Georgetown after spending the weekend up in Greenville. Chris, how are you, sir?
I am very well. You sound like you're still a bit under the weather, but glad you're on the mend. And I think you summed up everything from the weekend pretty well, with the exception you left out one other big story today. Coastal has a new basketball coach.
They do indeed. Tell us more.
Justin Gray is going to take over for Cliff Ellis. Not an easy shoe to fill, but he comes over from Western Carolina. After three seasons with Catamounts, he'll be officially introduced on Thursday at a press conference. His team at Western just went 22-10 this past year and lost in overtime to Furman over the weekend in the SoCon quarterfinals. So from all indications, I talked with a buddy of mine up in Western North Carolina who covers the Catamounts. He said it's a home run hire for CCU. Very, very impressed with Justin Gray, who had a tremendous playing career at Wake Forest and a really, really good pro career overseas, and is a Pat Kelsey disciple. Worked for him at Winthrop before going to Western Carolina, and now will take over the reins at Coastal.
What kind of ball does he like to play?
That's a good question. I'll have to ascertain that when we visit with him. My guess is he was such a terrific three-point shooter in his career at Wake and in the pros. My guess is he'd like to get it up and down the floor. I mean, their game with Furman was a 79-76 contest in overtime, so not overly high-scoring game, especially considering the extra session. But, yeah, we'll have to figure out what he likes to play. But whatever he's done, it's been very good. My guess is probably a similar style, and if that's the case, you know, as I mentioned, he's a Pat Kelsey disciple, and we know how much Pat Kelsey likes to shoot the three. So my guess is Justin Gray took some of that with him, and we'll, like I said, we'll find out when we first get a chance to meet with him on a Thursday.
Very good. Smitty joins us. Of course, Smitty was ringside for all the activity yesterday in Greenville and throughout the weekend. So what'd you think as everything played out in front of you yesterday?
Well, can you guys hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Hear you dandy.
Okay, great. Yes, well, that's great. Yeah, I was absolutely ringside. And Chris hit the nail on the head in a group text that we've got about Kim Mulkey. To me, I didn't want to put this in the story because I was trying everything I could to remain an unbiased observer and just report what was happening without too much commentary. I thought we would do that this week. But I thought Kim Mulkey came into the press conference, stomped into her postgame press conference with Angel Reese, and was acting like a fight promoter whose fighter had just been screwed over on a technical knockout or on the judge's decision, lost by split decision. That was how they, meaning LSU, treated it. Like, we're ready for a rematch. We want to come back. We're ready for the NCAA tournament. There were, you know, a lot of low blows on both sides, but the referee lost control. It is what it is. We're ready. We're ready for round three, or however many rounds you want to start counting, because South Carolina has beaten LSU 16 consecutive times. Believe me when I tell you, there was not anyone covering those two press conferences. And by the way, I was one of the few, because I had the ability to run back and forth, see what was going on in the celebration out on the floor, and run back in and catch Kim Mulkey's press conference. I was there for every minute of Kim Mulkey's press conference and Dawn Staley's press conference. I will tell you, I don't know if I have ever observed a more stark contrast between the way two coaches and two programs handled a situation. Usually, when emotions boil over like that, and I've been in many press conferences at the end of any sport, basketball, football, baseball, where everybody is still fired up and the emotions still have them. Dawn Staley and her team, the ones, Camila Cardozo, she was obviously, she was ejected and she lost control. But the players there in the postgame, Tahina Pau Pau and Malaysia Fawiley, and the players that were left, just the six remaining players, to celebrate South Carolina's eighth SEC championship, were very composed and somber. They were saddened by the situation. It was a completely different take on what had just happened. And I think it's due in large part to LSU knew that they were going to have to turn this into a wrestling match in order to have a chance. They were shorthanded. They knew they were an outmatched, and they were going to have to turn it into a wrestling match. And anybody that saw it, and I'm glad there was enough social media, and based on what I saw on our own timeline, everybody saw what was going on. Angel Reese came out immediately and started throwing elbows at Camila Cardozo and Ashlyn Watkins, and the entire LSU team was really just kind of grabbing shorts and pulling hair at every opportunity. And South Carolina remained composed for so long. Phil, I will tell you, there were a lot of media members, and I won't call them out by name because these were private conversations. These were media members that you respect, Chris respects, our audience respects, were talking to me through the second quarter and at halftime and raising their eyebrows and saying, if the officials don't get control of this, there'll be a melee before this is over with. And it played out just like that. It finally, Cardozo had gotten her lip bloodied, and when she saw one of her teammates fouled, she lost control. But I will tell you, and I've got a little montage I put together that hopefully we'll have time for today, I have never sat through two press conferences. It seemed like the coaches had been there at two different games on two different days. Completely different takes on what happened on the floor.
Yeah, South Carolina, I thought, took the very high road because, right after the game, Dawn Staley is apologizing, saying that's not us and saying the right things. I thought she said the right things. Mulkey was, like you said, she was combative, and she was like, don't push my little girl. Why don't you come push Angel Reese and see what happens? Kind of stoking the fire, which is okay. And people were kind of jumping on Angel Reese for not getting over there and getting in the mix. But, I mean, to me, wasn't that a smart move by her? Had she run over there, would she not have been subject to ejection by coming off the bench? She had gone to the bench because of her ankle, and she didn't run over there with the rest of the people on the bench when the skirmish broke out. She stayed behind. I think that was probably a smart move on her part. She'd probably been ejected. I mean, let's face it. The game was not over. There were still 2 minutes to go. Now you're South Carolina. There's no Cardoso, and there's no whole bunch of people. I mean, you're down to – they had to play with five, right? And
they had six.
Gamecocks had six?
Six, yeah. Pow-Pow was at the scorer's table about to check in.
That's
so she was allowed to stay, you know, because she technically didn't leave the bench.
Yeah.
So she was allowed to stay. But everybody else, you're right on both sides. And I agree with you. I think the only thing I would agree that Angel Reese did correctly was stay out of that mix.
Yeah.
She doesn't play hard enough, though, Phil, for her to get involved with that. She's not interested in that.
She does
at all.
Seem to be a little bit concerned about her eyelashes and her fingernails.
Lazy. I would say lazy. And I'm going to tell you this. In the SEC, and Angel Reese is a fabulous player. But you give me Rekia Jackson, I'll take Rekia Jackson every day of the week and twice on Sunday. I think she's a better all-around player. Should have been SEC Player of the Year. I get why Angel Reese got it because of the promotions of her, and she's on a team that won the national championship, the whole nine yards. But Angel Reese has no interest in trying to play very hard. You watch her jog up and down the floor. I mean, Camilla Cardoso didn't really have to play all that hard because she can jog back and beat her to the other end of the floor. I love Rekia Jackson, and Rekia Jackson's the reason that Tennessee made it so difficult on USC on Saturday. I would take her, every day of the week and twice on Sundays before I would take Angel Reese.
Smitty, let's go back to Saturday and the most astonishing moment of the weekend, I think you could say, in all of college basketball. And your thoughts as that played out, because, you know, you go back and you look at it, and, you know, Tennessee, they did not do the smart thing, but at the time it seemed like the smart thing. You know, South Carolina was coming down the floor, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is how I'm looking at it. They're coming down the floor, they're trailing, clock is running down, they're coming down the floor willy-nilly, and somebody was just going to, like, I think Full Wiley had the ball, and was probably going to have to launch a desperation shot from, like, half court, and they fouled her because they had a foul to give. And the thought is, of course, you know, it says on paper, foul, to give, give it, give the foul, you know, make them take it out of bounds, et cetera, et cetera. But that gave the Gamecocks a chance to set up their play and to have a decent look. My point is, guys, and Smitty, you can take it first, did Tennessee make a mistake by giving up that foul when it looked like South Carolina was just going to have to throw up a Hail Mary?
You know, that part is very interesting, Corn, and I heard all differing opinions from everyone sitting around, because there were some that said they fouled Full Wiley and they should have fouled again with 1.1 seconds left. They should have manned up on every player, and as soon as the ball was inbounded, foul immediately, because Tennessee actually had yet another foul to give. What you're describing, however, is very difficult for a coach. Kelly Harper said she didn't take, as Tennessee's head coach, did not take a timeout because South Carolina did not have any timeouts. So she didn't take a timeout because she wanted South Carolina to be frantic. But that means that she had to tell her players, foul now. So it's very difficult within that, I guess, 6 to 7 second period to tell a player, you can't tell a player to foul and then tell them, well, don't foul now, because South Carolina, it looks like they're kind of in a herky-jerky situation. I'll say this, however, I'll push back on one thing, and this is why Dawn Staley got the ball in the hands of Malaysia Full Wiley. She's made plays all season long at the ends of quarters because no one can stay in front of her. And she's so quick, she can advance the ball so quickly and get into position to shoot. She's the scariest player in women's college basketball with her hands on it and 2, 3, or 4 seconds left, because she can go from half court to the paint area in that amount of time. So what you're saying, yes, Fully Wiley was flying down the floor, and perhaps the play would have been make a difficult shot at that point. But I'll tell you, I don't think anybody wants any piece of Malaysia Full Wiley in the open floor. By the way, on that same point, LSU's got a real problem. They may want a rematch, and in the postgame, Angel Reese said she wanted to play 5 more minutes. If they would have played five more minutes, Mileja Fulwiley might have scored 40. They could not stop her. They don't have a player in an LSU uniform, injured, healthy, or that's ever been there, unless you want to start going to the men and counting Pistol Pete Maravich, that can stay in front of Mileja Fulwiley. She's a problem. If they play again and I were Dawn Staley, I'd start Fulwiley. Mm-hmm. They cannot deal with her, and that is the number – the fact that LSU cannot defend her is reason one, two, and three why she is the tournament's most outstanding player. She was good in the other – she was actually not great in the first game, anything very good in game two in the semifinals. She could play LSU. She'd score 20 anytime she wants to. They do not have anybody that can move with her laterally. That's an issue for LSU if they saw South Carolina again in the finals.
What do you think, Chris?
Well, and I think Kelly Harper's big mistake was the same mistake Rick Pitino made against Duke back in the, 91 NCAA tournament going to, the Elite Eight, where he allowed Grant Hill to throw a length of the pass, length of the court pass to Grant Hill because he didn't guard the inbounder. Same thing here. Put your tallest player that you have for Tennessee, guard the inbounder. Make it difficult. If I had to draw up defensively who I wanted to shoot a three on South Carolina's team, it would absolutely be Camilla Cardoso. The numbers tell you she's not going to make it because she hasn't tried very many. So you want her to take that shot. You'd like to have had one of your bigs maybe actually contest the shot instead of standing underneath the basket. I don't know what they anticipated they could do there. But where Kelly Harper made her biggest mistake, I think, was not guarding the inbounder. We don't know Grant Hill nearly as well as we do now. If Rick Pitino had guarded the inbounder in that play because he doesn't get off a clean pass to Leitner for the win, and I don't think we're talking about Camilla Cardoso as a three for the win the same way if Tennessee guards the inbounder. I don't know why coaches don't do that. It just make that pass more difficult than it was.
Speaking of dirty plays, what about Kyle Tripowski? I know it's Flipowski, but now he's Tripowski. I mean, it was pretty evident he was tripping that North Carolina player as he was running back down the court Saturday night, yet there's been nothing out of the ACC office today. If they were going to take some action, I would imagine it would have happened today. That was pretty blatant, wasn't it? I mean, you could clearly see him lift his leg to try to trip the Tar Heel going back down the court.
Well, he's gone from victim back to villain, right? I mean, that's the progress of Duke players. You know, they cry villain, cry victim, and he was when he got trampled when Wake Forest stormed the floor. But again, you go back to, you know, sticking your leg out and trying to trip somebody. It's like Grayson Allen all over again from Duke. They just have these guys who push the envelope way too far. And again, the ACC, if you think the ACC is going to suspend Kyle Filipowski for the ACC tournament, Phil, it's not going to happen. North Carolina would not lose R.J. Davis either for the ACC tournament. They've got to have their superstars there. So nothing's going to happen. There should be. I mean, I'll agree that Camilla Cardoso should be suspended for the first round of the NCAA tournament because of what she did. I think Kyle Filipowski should probably sit in the first game of the ACC tournament, but it's not going to happen.
Well, nothing's come out of it yet, so we'll see. Smitty, you'll be up there in D.C., so you can watch for yourself what it looks like up there with the Tar Heels and the Blue Devils, and we'll see if Clemson can get back on the right foot here. The Tigers need to have more than just a one-night stay in D.C.,
Yep, I think you're right, Korn. Look, I think they're going to the NCAA tournament regardless, but they're playing for seeding at this stage and momentum as well, because the way you reported on the game for the night, Clemson's loss at Wake Forest, you know, that's not how you want your season to end, because Brad Brownell, he hangs his hat on defense. That's why he's got players like Ian Sheflin. They are a defense-first club, and to see it wilt away against Wake Forest, and it's a tough place to play. Wake only lost one game up there this season, but you're right. I think they need more than a one-game stay. If nothing else, they want to rebuild that confidence. And look, they're going to play the winner of Boston College in Miami, and nothing builds confidence like playing Boston College in the ACC tournament. So I think there's a real good chance they stay at least for two nights.
Well, that brings us to our poll question of the week. Brad Brownell about to take Clemson to a fourth tournament. He has 2 years left on his contract, paying him $3 million per season. Should AD Graham Neff give Brownell a new long-term contract? 115 votes in this afternoon. 60% say no. 40% say yes. Discuss this as we move forward, and we'll get to your phone calls as well after this break on Sports Talk. All right, welcome back, everybody. Sports Talk, Sports Talk Media Network. To your calls in just a second. Today, a pretty heavy news day, the Monday after the conclusion of the regular season basketball, SEC, ACC. You got your postseason accolades, awards coming out today. Very quickly, tell you that in the SEC, South Carolina's Lamont Paris was named the SEC Coach of the Year. Well, second duh. Time he's...
I said, well, duh.
Oh, yeah.
There was never an easier option than him this year.
Yeah. Second time he's won a Coach of the Year honor. He also did it when he was at UT Chattanooga a couple of years ago. Gamecocks had a couple of players named on the All-SEC team. Gamecocks had named to the second team. Let's see here. The Gamecocks had Michi Johnson and Talon Cooper named to the All-SEC second team, and forward Colin Murray-Boyles was named to the All-Freshman team. The individual awards for the conference besides Paris, Player of the Year is Dalton Connect, Tennessee, Scholar-Athlete Sean East of Missouri. Had to give them something. 0-18 in league play. Wow. Freshman of the Year, Reed Shepherd of Kentucky. Sixth man, Rob Dillingham, Kentucky. And Defensive Player of the Year, Zakai Ziegler from Tennessee. Now, Clemson, the ACC, announced their awards today as well. And P.J. Hall was named first team on ACC. And a well-deserved honor for him.
Mm-hmm.
That 2 years in a row, wasn't he first team All-ACC last year?
No, Tyson... Hunter Tyson was last year. And interestingly enough, Clemson said that's the first time they've ever had back-to-back first-team honorees in the All-ACC in program history. Now, Dale Davis and who was it with him were first-team together, but they've never
Eldon
had back-to-back.
Campbell, maybe?
Thank you. Yeah, they've never had back-to-back, though, which I thought was fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Well, he gets first-team All-ACC honors, and Joseph Girard and Ian Shefflin are honorable mention. Shefflin was named the most improved player in the league this year. Marcus Burton of Notre Dame, the rookie of the year. Reese Beekman of Virginia, defensive player of the year. And the player of the year is R.J. Davis of North Carolina. And the coach of the year was
Davis.
Was it Hubert?
Hubert Davis.
Yeah, Hubert Davis was the Coach of the Year. Brad Brownell got one vote for Coach of the Year. Jeff Capel was second in the voting behind Hubert Davis. And there you go. That's the story on that. So let's get to your phone calls.
I'm sorry, Corner. Can I just make an argument? Can we agree with North Carolina? Fine. You want to have the ACC tournament in Greensboro half the time. You want to get all the calls at Chapel Hill. No UNC coach should ever be Conference Coach of the Year. Ever.
Mm. Just because it's too easy? Is it because it's too easy?
Yes. Tell me, pick a job in the ACC. Just throw a dart. What do you want to do? Well, I might be the North Carolina head coach if I'm not the Duke head coach. But no, they are out of the running. They are out of the running. They should never be the ACC Coach of the Year. Far too many advantages. Go back and look. If Hubert Davis quit tomorrow, they'd get a top 10 recruiting class.
It's very true. You know, it brings up an interesting question, Smitty, to ask, and I think it illustrates the Lamont Paris situation. Are you a better coach because you took a team projected to be the worst team in the league and got them into the top two? Or do you do a better job if you're Hubert Davis and you're expected to win the league and you go out and win the league? I don't know the answer to that.
When you're – it's like Dean Smith. How many Coach of the Year awards could Dean Smith have won at North Carolina? But, you know, he's competing against such high expectations. But,
exactly.
I mean, year in, year out, his team was winning the championships for all those years.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to go back and look at the records to see how many times he was voted Coach of the Year. I don't think they gave it to him every year, but you could have given it to him every year because he always had the best team. All right, to the phone calls, 888-898-2525. We go to Gamecock Larry. What a surprise leading us off tonight. Gamecock Larry, welcome in. How are you?
I am doing great. We got a national championship at University of South Carolina Gamecocks. We got a national championship in hockey. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know we had a hockey team. But let me tell you, I'm just going to talk about LSU and South Carolina. And first, I want to say something to Kim Mulkey. Kim Mulkey, the way you coach, the way you let your players play, but they play the way you want them to play, and that is, I'm going to tell you just like it is, dirty. You are a disgrace to the women's college basketball. You are a disgrace. You are the Ric Flair of women's college basketball. The way you dress, the way you act, the way you talk. And I will agree with one thing you said. You wish that Cardoza would have pushed Angel Reese. I wish she would have too, because you would have still been picking pretty girl Angel Reese up off the floor. Kim Mulkey, you are a disgrace. There is no other. Well, yes, there's one. There's no. You're the second worst. You're the second most disliked team in old Gamecock, Larry, and you know who the other one is.
Who's number one, Larry? Who's number one?
Well, you know who's number one. The one that gets mad when Taliaferro Spartanburg called him. Wait a minute. Let's say this. Yes, I do. I can't put it any other way. I dislike the Clemson Tigers. And I don't care if my brother was coaching the Clemson Tigers. I would dislike my brother.
Ooh.
Now, you couldn't get no worse. I mean, you couldn't get no more dislike.
What if your mother was coaching the Clemson Tigers? Would you dislike your mother?
I'm gonna tell you. I wouldn't tell her I disliked her, but I would. No, you know what I mean. Man, you're trying to get me married. I don't know. Yeah, I'd have disliked. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. I would have disliked, I guess, because I do not like nothing. I don't like nothing about the Clemson Tigers, but I do like one thing about one of their hosts on 100 points. I do like him. You know who I'm talking about, Mr. Phil. But boy, I tell you, man, come out there and Cardoza. If that little girl and Kim Mulkey hollered, don't push the little girl, let the little girls go. If the little girl didn't want to be pushed, why did she start the stuff? But that's about all
it
I
was,
got.
Thank you. Thank you very much. are you done, Larry?
I got one other thing to say. Let me see what it was. The men's basketball, boy, I'm proud of them. And, proud of them. And baseball's going to be all right. But if men won and the Tigers lost, that made me feel good. And Kim Mulkey got a little girl pushed to the floor. And she didn't like it. She wished she... Cardoza the fish pushed the Angel through. Angel, whatever name is, the one that got them long nails, probably curly tails and pull hair and throw elbows and all that. Boy, I tell you what. And Bull Wally, a freshman, Bull Wally outplayed Angel Reese and the whole LSU team all during the game. That's all I got to say. I love all y'all, even. No, I ain't going to say because I don't like y'all. I'm going to go, yeah, I do. You know what I mean.
We got you, Larry.
I'm walking.
We got, thank you very much. Yeah. All right, good hearing from you, Gamecock Larry. He loves all y'all except for a few. I like the way he doesn't hold back his emotions. I don't know. I think that it was a Smitty. It was a. I think Mulkey was kind of right when she pointed out afterwards. Boy, she was snippy with the ESPN reporter. At, was that a halftime interview or after the first quarter? She was real snippy. But it was a physical game, and the referees were letting them play. And I think she was accurate in pointing out. I think her, she was implying the fact that there were so few fouls called that that led to a rough game and that eventually it spilled over into what happened at the end of the game.
And you're right, Corn, and I do agree with that. I don't agree with a lot that Kim Mulkey said or where, but I did agree that she's right that the officials played a hand in this. They lost control by – and look, admittedly, her team was trying to make it into a wrestling match. Angel Reese was came out after the opening tip and was throwing elbows, but I'll defend them in one respect, just one respect. If you're throwing elbows and you're not getting whistled for it, you're just going to continue to do it. You can't expect players to police themselves with an SEC championship on the line. LSU hadn't beaten South Carolina in the last 15 tries. They feel disrespected, so they were going to play, quote, dirty until somebody stopped them. What I don't understand is what the officials were looking at most of the game. Even when the brawl – it wasn't a brawl. Even when Cardoso shoved Flo J. Johnson – when that was going on, the officials let Johnson go to the neck of Ashlyn Watkins when she walked by. She walked by, and I couldn't tell whether she was taunting her, whether she was trying to celebrate with Full Wiley, but Johnson threw a shot to Watkins' neck. None of the three officials were looking in that direction. And if you go back and watch the film just as I did, if you break it down like the Zapruder film and go frame by frame, you'll see the three officials – did not see Cardoso shove Johnson initially. It's only when Johnson hit the floor and people started to pour onto the court that the officials knew anything was going on.
Yeah.
And here, by the way, you would hope in the NCAA tournament you'd get better officiating. Here's the problem. That was the SEC championship game, and that's the best women's basketball conference. That is the best officiating women's college basketball. That's the best three they could find. That's top notch. That's top shelf. And I thought they were an embarrassment. The person that couldn't make my change at Walmart last week is better at their job than those three officials were. Kim Mulkey was right about that. She wasn't right about much, but she was right about that.
Yeah, sorry about that, Smitty. I always have a hard time counting backwards and trying to figure out change for people. So it's a difficult.
Corn, Corn. You're a greeter.
I do the checkout line late at night. And the dude that jumped across the table, Johnson's brother, he was arrested and taken to jail. Should have been.
As he should have been.
Prosecuted and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, you can't let something like that just go. A message has got to be sent. You can't just, you know, jump across the table like that at your own volition.
Why
when
do
you
think
something's going on the court? I mean, come on. We got to put up barbed wire around, press row or around the court to keep these knuckleheads, off the playing field, off the courts. That's just crazy.
He put his hands on Camila Cardoso. I mean, what was he thinking? What was his end game? Were you going to tackle Camila if the Greenville County and Greenville City Police didn't get to you in time? I mean, I just don't understand how fans get that involved. I mean, I love our teams, and I want our teams to win, and I get disappointed just like everybody else when they lose. But good grief. I know there's a line there, and I'm never going to cross it. And, again, it goes back to, how I feel about storming the floor. Well, here's the reason number 97 that nonsense should never happen. You've got a guy who jumped over the scores table and grabbed one of the players on the opposing team because he didn't like what he was seeing happen to his team.
Yeah. Yeah, very dangerous. I mean, lucky for them, he didn't have any criminal intent on his mind. I mean, once he jumped across the table, he just – and you're right, he made contact with Cardoso.
Mm-hmm.
But it was sort of like, okay, where am I going next? Well, by then, of course, they had jumped him and got his hands behind him. I think they were putting him in handcuffs. But very fortunate, man. That's just not a good thing to have happen. How much security – I mean, there was security right there. They acted very quickly. I can't blame them.
Yeah.
They moved as quickly as they could. They were right there, Johnny, on the spot. But unless you want security standing up 24 hours a day, so to speak, around a game, maybe that's what we've got to go to. You've got to have security lined up, facing the crowd. If anybody makes a move towards the table, you grab them. You know, you ask questions later. Then, of course, you're subject to being sued. Well, I was just going to the bathroom. You know, you're subject to being
sued. It's the fastest way.
by grabbing somebody. You know, excuse me, sir, I was just going to the men's room. So, all right, let's run to the break, and we'll take more calls on the opposite side. Phone number 888-898-2525, South Carolina Education Lottery. Lucky number for you here. And the latest net rankings for the week came out earlier today. Clemson 26, South Carolina 49, College of Charleston 100, and Furman 143, Winthrop 178. Give me the rest in a moment.
Calling all turkey hunters, this is Major Billy Down, South Carolina Department of Natural Resources. Turkey season is coming soon. The most common accident while turkey hunting is failing to identify your target. Know the identifying features of a turkey. Make sure of your target and what lies beyond it before you pull the trigger. Remember, safe hunting is no accident. For more information on hunter education, visit dnr.sc.gov.
Last year was a big year for Founders Federal Credit Union and our amazing members. A total of $30 million was given back to qualifying members in the form of loyalty bonus dividends, proving once again that it pays to be a Founders member. Founders is also committed to pouring time and resources into the local communities we serve. If you aren't a member yet, what are you waiting for? Join Founders today. Visit foundersfcu.com. Federally insured by NCUA. Membership qualification required.
Stay tuned. More Sports Talk is coming up on the Sports Talk Media Network.
I'm attorney Jim Corbett. That's the sound of a big hit on you and your car or truck. I've been an attorney for more than 30 years, helping people who get injured in car wrecks and truck wrecks. If you have serious injuries, call Jim Corbett, 803-765-2968, or email me at jim@jimcorbettattorney.com. That's C-O-R-B-E-T-T. I don't get paid unless I recover for you. Jim Corbett Attorney, for your best recovery from a big hit, 803-765-2968, or jim@jimcorbettattorney.com.
You've put in the work for your education. The extra early, extra late, extra, extra work. That's because you understand education opens doors to better pay, better opportunities, and a better you. Being educated about playing the lottery is no different. It helps you be a better player, one who knows when to play and when to take a rain check. The lottery's a game, so let's keep it fun. Learn more at sceducationlottery.com/betteryou.
Get back to your phone calls. And we go to Hank in Columbia. Next up on Sports Talk. Hank, welcome in. Good to have you with us. Hank, are you there, sir?
Yes, I'm here, Corn. How's it going?
Go right ahead, sir. Yes, sir.
Hey, Corn. You know, it was a good weekend minus the little melee and you know, it kind of – our girls were, you know, they're happy. They did the celebrations to do the pictures, but they wanted to be with the other girls. And so kind of dampened a little bit of the celebration because they wanted the other girls to be with them. But, you know, by rule, they had to be ejected. Of course, they ejected all of the LSU girls that were on their bench. And it was strange, you know, a kind of thing, I guess, that kind of bothers me. I guess technically it's right, but kind of bothers me. You know, you see, you pick up some of the articles and it says six players ejected, four South Carolina girls and two LSU girls. But actually they ejected like six LSU girls. But because they had never – because she was only playing two off the bench and they had never checked in to the game, they didn't count these into some of these stories that they put out. Because if you actually watch the game, they show both of the groups of girls that were ejected running back underneath.
Yeah.
And you could see six or either seven LSU girls run back into the locker room.
Why weren't
all
they
dressed out
for
the game?
Why weren't they accounted for?
I guess they're saying that because they had never checked into the game yet, she hadn't checked them into the game yet, that they weren't ejected. They were just asked to leave. And so
now,
I know that's a little
ejection.
Thing, but
there's no other way to put that. It's got to be an ejection, Chris. That's got to be an ejection.
It was.
You can't just say, ask to leave. Will you please leave the premises?
But to Hank's point.
But you read the stories. That's how the stories are. It's a six people ejected. And Carolina plays their whole entire bench. So you see the four. You see some people saying, well, there are four. If you didn't watch the game, you see people saying, oh, there were four Carolina players ejected and two LSU. It didn't show a proper story.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. That makes no sense. No. I agree with you.
So
it makes no sense.
Yeah. I had a problem with that. And if you watch the game, you can clearly see them all running out of there because they showed a video of the girls who were ejected on both sides as they ran back into their locker room. So, yeah, it's kind of bothersome. That's the one thing that kind of bothered me. But I have a hats off to our girls, hats off to our coach and for what she – instills. I mean, she immediately, before even saying anything about accepting the trophy, apologized for the atmosphere and any part our girls had into it. Camilla went and released a statement to her standpoint. I tell you, I was really proud of Ashlyn Watkins because when Ashlyn Watkins got here her first year, remember a couple of times she was going up to dunk and a couple of girls undercut her, and Ashlyn had like a little short fuse.
Mm-hmm.
And Don sat her for long periods of time after the first one happened and sat her some time after her second one, and she hadn't had an event like that since. And that's discipline. And so when a girl hit Ashlyn, if this would have been Ashlyn's freshman year, it might have really got ugly.
Yep.
But Ashlyn didn't get involved with it. It seemed like they got more frustrated as they realized that South Carolina was just going to continue to execute and win the game. I mean, the one time they got the one, South Carolina pushed it right back out to 7 or 8. And that was – but I just had to say the whole weekend was good. The arena was – the semifinal night and the finals night, that arena was packed to the hilt. I mean,
yeah,
it was packed to the gills. I don't know if you were there, you could see it on TV. I mean, it was
Smitty
packed
was
to
there.
The gills.
Yes, Smitty was
and
there.
And I don't know how loud I've been. I've been to a lot of loud arenas at home, but when Cardoza hit that shot, that building was about as loud and electric as it could be. And so it's a good tournament, testament to Dawn. You know, she did that last play without a timeout, and she kind of read off of what Tennessee was doing. They didn't want to give her a timeout, but they were locked into her, what she was telling them to do, and she was going to run the play to pow-pow to start. But when the girl dipped below the free throw line, before they inbounded the pass, she told Camilla to step back and shoot.
Yeah.
So it was good.
Pretty amazing. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate it, Hank. Good hearing from you. Hank goes chuckling off into the background. Real quick, let's go to Trash Talking Tiger, he likes to call himself. We know him better as the Angry Black Man. His family knows him as Oliver. Welcome in, sir. You got about a minute.
Good afternoon.
Actually, you got about 30 seconds.
First of all, those three referees should never be able to call another game in college basketball. They should never. And Carolina fan, I know it was ugly, but let it go. Move on, move on. And for Duke and North Carolina, they can't do no wrong in the NCAA. So I'm saying this, so they can always favor Duke. Duke got caught with the cookie jar twice in the hand and slapped him on the wrist. North Carolina with
all
the
right. Hang on, we got to hit the break. Be right back.
Welcome back to Sports Talk on the Sports Talk Media Network. You can reach the guys with the South Carolina Education Lottery lucky number, 888-898-2525. That's 888-898-2525. Now back to Phil, Chris, and Pat with the second hour of Sports Talk on the Sports Talk Media Network.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It's hour number two of Sports Talk on this Monday night. Phil Kornblut, Chris Bergen, and Matt Smith all with you. Josh Cohen in our studios in downtown Columbia. Big week ahead. Smitty heading up to D.C. to cover the ACC tournament. Clemson in action on Wednesday night. Always that treasured, most desired tip time of allegedly 9:30 on Wednesday night. Hold your breath, see if they actually tip before 10. And then I'll be in Nashville for South Carolina. Gamecocks playing on Thursday afternoon, second game of the day. So looking forward to being at those locations to bring you the coverage of those tournaments and our thoughts on what we see at those respective sites. Both teams, of course, in great shape as far as NCAA tournament is concerned today. Depending on which of the bracketologists you like to look at, South Carolina's a 5 seed or a 6 seed, or Clemson could be a 5 seed still. That's kind of where they're sitting at this point. So it's been a great year for both. Of course, South Carolina, truly the surprise team in the country. I think if they're not number one in that category, they're not far behind. This was a team that won 11 games last year, and Lamont Paris went to the transfer portal, brought in several players, put those pieces together, and stirred them all up, and here's what you got, a 25-win team. The Gamecocks are 15th in the AP ranking today. It's the first time they've been in a March AP ranking since 2004. So a lot of accomplishments by this team. One of the key players, of course, one of the key additions was B.J. Mack, transferred from Wofford, and he has been a steady influence on this team from day one. You might recall back in the summer, his dad, who's a coach, Brian Mack, joined us on Sports Talk to tell us all what the Gamecocks would be getting. And now Coach Mack joins us once again to tell us what they got in B.J. Mack this season. Coach, how are you?
I'm doing good. How's everybody doing today?
We're doing fantastic. Thank you for joining us. What's your take on the Gamecocks season and what B.J. and the others were able to do to help turn this thing around?
Oh, great season, great season. I mean, I really enjoyed this season, seeing the turnaround. Like, when the reports came out at the beginning of the year, they ranked them last in the conference. That was something that me and B.J. scheduled. Me and him usually try to set goals of, you know, just little measured marks and things that along the year we can look at and see. And that was one of the first things. And nobody believed him, you know. And from DJ's take away, he's been, you know, coming through up the years, that's nothing different with him. So we've always used his motivation. So at the beginning of the year, I told him, I said, let's go out and show him who you are and what you're about. And, you know, he's done that consistently this year. And, you know, South Carolina's had a great year. I think Coach did a very good job of blending the personalities into it and coming away to, you know, it's hard to manage a bunch of different personalities at one time and get everybody on the same page as quickly as he's done.
Why do you think B.J. fit in so well with Coach Paris and with the other newcomers?
He's so unselfish. B.J.'s thing is about winning. He's always been about winning. And, you know, for a father, those attributes translate into you as a man. I mean, he'll do what's necessary to win. There are going to be games when he needs to score. There are going to be games when he needs to be a decoy. And those are the things that I wanted to see him grow on this year. You know, like nobody expected. He's probably one of the most double-team players in the country. But at the beginning of the year, everybody said he couldn't do, he wouldn't do because of all of these various things. But look at what he got accomplished.
Talking with Brian Mack, the father of USC forward B.J. Mack. I mean, B.J., he has an unusual set of skills. I mean, a guy his size who can back you down to the rim, which he likes to do, likes to put the ball on the floor, get a guy on his back, back him down, and try and make a move around him. Yet, at the same time, he's extremely comfortable standing outside and facing up and shooting a three.
Yes, he is. I mean, that's how he was trained growing up. There are not a lot of big man camps in the youth market around there. So B.J. grew up and going to most of the elite camps where he featured guards. So, you know, he had to learn those skills. And his best friend is a point guard. So, you know, with them working out, they go through the same drills. Like, there's one of my best friends. I used to hate using shooting jump shots when he was younger. I always wanted them to be that dominant force on the inside. But now, you know, in today's game, you have to be able to stretch the floor and be able to get space. So, you know, it's just a tribute to his hard work of being a student of the game and being able to fit into today's modern game, also being unique.
What do you see from the hands-on coaching from B.J. Mack, I'm sorry, from Coach Paris, and the staff, what do you see that they've done with BJ's game to help him, you know, take that next step? What changes have they made, or maybe just some subtle adjustments have they made?
Giving him a different approach of learning from the game. Like, I'm a very in-your-face type coach that very knowledgeable, but I bring it to you in a different way. Coach Paris and his staff have done the same thing as far as giving knowledge to BJ, but just bringing it to him in a different form because they wanted to be able to him to show his leadership skills. So in getting him out of his shell to be able to speak up, if you notice in a lot of the timeouts and home, BJ's the first one to grab the guys together. That was one of the things where Coach Paris said he wanted to do when he was getting older, get more experienced guys, guys who've been through the fire, he's been in certain situations. You know, that's BJ. He's never really too up. He's never really too down. So, you know, he's like a linchpin.
Coach Brian Mack, that's BJ Mack's father, joining us here on Sports Talk. And, Coach, you know, this is an interesting group. Some transfers, some guys that were already a part of the program, but they just seem to gel so well. They seem to all fit into place. It really worked out the way the recruiting fell. And the way they play essentially with two point guards, Michi Johnson and Talon Cooper. They can both score, can both shoot, can both handle the ball. Tell us about that dynamic, because I think it's really worked for South Carolina, really worked in their favor playing that combination this season.
Yeah, it does. It allows coach to have freedom to be able to change some things up depending on what the other team's strategy is. Like if you look at the Florida game, for example, that was one of BJ's not a good scoring game, but Florida went to the point to make sure they double teamed him at all times. So BJ's growth and learning in that is you're not always going to score all the points, grab all the rebounds, but you have to be able to play your part in this by playing a big decoy in that situation. You gave the guys an honest chance to where they have to play these phenomenal guards like Michi and Talon one up. And I'll take that game any day long.
In your conversations with him here in recent days, recent weeks, what's the feeling you're getting from him and that he's maybe sharing from his teammates about how they feel about going into this SEC tournament, how they feel about going in the NCAA tournament, and about, you know, how far they can go in this postseason? Where are they feeling the confidence level with these guys from what you can tell?
Confidence is high. Confidence is high. Like, I spoke with BJ today, and for a father, he's a little upset because he didn't make any of the SEC teams. But I look at it, yeah, I was a little upset when it first came out. But sitting back thinking about it is he needed that extra motivation. we went into the SEC tournament. So, you know, with the guys feeling like they were disrespected because they dropped to fifth and they feel like they should have gotten a double bye, it puts that chip back on their shoulder that was there at the beginning of the year. And as a father seeing BJ, you know, everyone would like to see their kids receive certain rewards or acknowledgement. But on the flip side of that, now that he's on this stage, it's a chance for him to use that as motivation, that every one of those coaches that didn't vote you on there, now when you see them in it, make sure they remember why they should have voted for him.
Has he thought much about the future after this season, what his next step's going to be?
Nah, BJ, you know, every kid dreams of, you know, playing in the NBA. But that's the one thing that I love about my son. And one thing that me and his mom has tried to do is keep him focused on what's at hand, the task at hand. Because if you get to looking at, well, what I'll be doing in 6-8 months, you're not going to put your full concentration in what's ahead of you, and you're not going to accomplish that task. So just with him, you know, we've heard all the calls, all the things, but when the time comes for that, then he'll do it. But right now, I just want him focused on these last few remaining games that he has, because, you know, his college experience, it's more than just on the basketball field. You know, he's really only guaranteed 2 more games in your college. Now, you can make it as many as 10, but he's guaranteed 2. And that's what I'm telling him. You have to make sure that whatever works out of this, you put everything into that. Because the last thing you want to do is walk away from your college career and feel like you didn't give it your all.
Final thing with you, as a coach, and you look at the job that Lamont Paris has done this year at South Carolina, what do you see there with the way he's taken these parts and pieced them all together and put together this very successful season? And that's the question. Is this the first plank in a very strong program that's going to repeat itself, or is this a flash in the pan kind of thing? What do you see there longevity-wise for South Carolina?
Longevity-wise, Coach Paris has the knowledge to keep this going. A lot of that with the transfer portals and things like that are really going to depend on the quality of kid that comes in. You know, is able to go back out and do this cycle, and the same type kid, available life, E-Ray, Talon, high school, these kids have been through some adversity. So they really bought into coming together. And, you know, for BJ and Talon, this was their last opportunity to make sure that they were a part of something. So I think if he gets those kinds of kids again with the same sort of talent level, it'll last. And I think he does have the knowledge to be able to get the best out of those kids.
Yeah. It does seem like he's pretty fortunate in that the guys he brought in, they all bought in. That's the important thing, right? I mean, you can bring in a bunch of different talented players, but they've all got to buy in, and they've all got to blend in. And when you look at the performances of your son and Cooper and Johnson and Studi, I mean, here comes Studi, and he loses his starting job after an injury, but he's not pouting about it. He's playing hard and doing what he can. They've all sort of bought in and blended in. That's rare, and it'll be a test to see if he can repeat that next year and the year to follow.
Yeah. I think, like I said, I think Coach really, with his demeanor, his knowledge of the game, and the way that he translated to the kids, like I said, it really is going to depend on the type of kids that are out there in the transfer portal. But for the kids that fits that model, they see that there is a place now in the SEC where I don't have to be the marquee guy. I've just got to be who I am and fit into this team. And it'll all work for everybody. You know, you get some situations where kids want to come in just so they could be that guy. I'll never think that with Coach Paris and the way that he communicates, he teaches team. He teaches we're all in the fight together, and one for all for one. So I think if he can really go back this year and get those kinds of kids that, you know, they want to go in as a team and reach a goal together, I think he'll be successful. And if he gets another year or two of that, then I think that'll brand South Carolina as the type of team organization and what they're trying to build. And then I think it'll be easier to get those kinds of kids. But he's off to a great start.
Brian, we appreciate the time, and congratulations to you and the family on everything that BJ has accomplished, and look forward to seeing you in Nashville and on down the road, and we'll see if the Gamecocks have those 2 games left in them or those 10 games left in them. That's a good way to put it, and we appreciate the time.
Thank you, man. Go Cox.
Good talking to you. Thank you, sir. Okay, Brian Mack, dad of BJ Mack. A friend of Sports Talk, a good contributor to Sports Talk. Love what he has to say. How about that, Chris? I like the way he broke it down. You've either got 2 games left or you've got 10 games left.
I have never heard anyone bring that up before, but he's exactly right. If you do the math, they've got to win 4 to win the SEC tournament, and they've got to win 6 to win the NCAA national championship. So I thought that was really interesting. Or they could lose their first-round game at both and be done.
Yeah.
But he talked about BJ, and quickly before we get to break, he talked about BJ maybe being snubbed a little bit as a dad, and I can understand that. But you look at the first and second team all-SEC, it's really hard to argue with anybody there. But to give you an idea of just how cohesive and how good a team South Carolina is, the best scoring defensive team in the SEC did not have one member on the all-defensive team. That shows you how well they play as a team, because you couldn't pick out anybody that was stellar on that side of the ball. But they are the best scoring defensive team in the SEC and did not have one member on the all-defensive team.
Chris, I think that's an incredible point. I'd also like to bring this up. It was either last night or 2 nights ago, Gigi Jackson scored 30 points in the NBA. When South Carolina was beating Florida and they moved to the 1-3-1 and they put Zach Davis at the top and they gave Florida so many issues, forced 9 turnovers, I believe, in the second half, it got me to thinking, where would you even play Gigi Jackson on this team? You couldn't do it. The way they – and it's not – I'm not knocking him. He's an NBA player, and he can put up points at that league, at that level. The way they play, they have to share the ball. They have to play the way they're playing to be one of the best teams in the SEC. There's no room for selfishness or I got to get mine on a team that's playing the way that the Gamecocks are.
Agreed.
Excellent point. And, again, I go back to there at Georgia when they had Ant Edwards, who's now, of course, a superstar in the NBA, but he couldn't win games in his 1 year at Georgia. He just couldn't win games, but he's a superstar in the NBA. Gigi Jackson is probably going to be a very good, if not higher level than that, NBA player, but he just didn't have a supporting cast with him, and it just that first year was, new coach, and, he was kind of, I'm not going to say, thrown in there. He would have been, from a basketball standpoint, had he been interested in winning an NCAA championship, obviously, he'd have been much better off sticking with his North Carolina commitment.
Sure.
And being surrounded with other great players. But at that, going to South Carolina, he was going to get the ball and score his points, but obviously they weren't going to win a whole bunch of games. All right, we got to hit the break, and we'll come back with the recruiting report tonight here on Sports Talk. And then Jim Thoman, the bottom of the hour, and then we've got some reaction from yesterday in Greenville that Smitty's put together from the two benches. So we'll have that coming up as well. And we will continue after this brief but very important timeout here on Sports Talk. Please pay attention to what you're about to hear because it's ultra important. We'll be back in a moment.
Call Lawyer Lisa. Experience the difference with Lawyer Lisa.
Hi, I'm Lisa Hosteller Brown. Did you know it's possible to avoid probate court after you die, regardless of what you own? Why put your loved ones through a long, stressful public process when there are better options for your family? Visit LawyerLisa.com to see how we can help.
Call Lawyer Lisa. Experience the difference with Lawyer Lisa.
7511 St. Andrews Road, Irmo, South Carolina.
Hi, yes, I'll have the club sandwich and house salad.
You got it, sweetie. I'll throw in a pair of designer sunglasses as well.
Just lunch, thanks.
How about a week at my boss's oceanfront villa?
What?
When you join the South Carolina Education Lottery's Players Club, you get way more than you expect. More chances, more wins, and more surprises.
Today's special, a trip to low Earth orbit in a private spaceship.
Join the Players Club at seeducationlottery.com because more happens here.
You're listening to Sports Talk on the Sports Talk Media Network. We're back in a moment.
Are you an enthusiastic sports fan? Want to have fun and get in on the action?
Heck yes, that'd be awesome.
Have great attention to detail? Want to stay active?
Definitely.
Want to give back to the student athletes in your community?
Obviously, yes.
Then you'd make an excellent high school sports official. We need more officials in South Carolina, because with no high school officials, there are no high school sports. Sign up today at highschoolofficials.com.
George Bryant for Tsunami Bar Sports, our inventor, David Abernathy, has always said Tsunami Bar technology allows us to take the training to the grass. Now I know through my sport of golf that natural agility can be converted to athletic ability. And why is this, Tsunami Robbie?
Transferring the training to the grass. This may be the most undervalued characteristic of the Tsunami flexible bar technology. The Tsunami bar action loads and unloads at the concentric and eccentric transition points. This is what we call reversal forces, and the Tsunami bar is the only bar and training device that I know of that can train these reversal forces adequately at speed.
Hey, this is Phil Kornblut. The Tsunami bar is a terrific training device whether you're working on your fitness or your golf game. It's convenient, it's easy to use, and you won't feel beat up afterwards. Be sure to click on the digital ad on sportstalksc.com and get 5% off any order using promo code BBB5. Don't wait. Order today.
Listen.
All right, let's give you the recruiting report tonight right here on Sports Talk. It is brought to you by Seawells. And Chris, have we had a chance to check out the Seawells menu for this week?
Well, let us see here as I pull it up.
I'll remind everybody about the daily lunch and buffet from 11 till 2, Monday through Friday, which is outstanding. Hope you can get over there and get a nice, healthy meal. That's what I need. I need a nice, healthy meal from Seawells. I'm obviously not eating enough healthy meals.
You need more roast beef Fridays in your life. They do not actually have an updated menu, so just go. Whatever they're having tomorrow on Tuesday, it'll be outstanding. Trust us.
We can promise you that it will be good. Yes. Yep. And, of course, with the spring and summer upon us, get ready for those big parties. You need the best from the catering side. All you got to do is call Seawells at 803-771-7385 or visit their website at SeawellsCateringSC.com. 2025 quarterback Ryan Montgomery of Findlay, Ohio, has set up three more unofficial spring visits, after which he may be ready to make his college decision. His father disclosed to us this morning they will revisit their top three schools. They will be at Georgia this Saturday, Florida on April the 6th, and USC April the 20th. That will coincide with the USC spring games. They'll have them there for a bunch of festivities. Clemson had a big junior day or days over the weekend. They had guys in Saturday and Sunday. Here's the list of fellas who were to be in this weekend at Clemson. Wide receiver Malik Clark of Rock Hill. Defensive tackle Christian Garrett of Bogart, Georgia. Wide receiver Micah Matthews of Bridgewater, Virginia. Linebacker Kamar Archie of Princeton, New Jersey. Safety Tay Harris of Cedartown, Georgia. Defensive end Bryce Davis of Greensboro, North Carolina. Defensive end Isaiah Gibson of Warner Robins, Georgia. Wide receiver Tyler Williams of Riverview, Florida. Wide receiver Dalen Upshaw of Phenix City, Alabama. Offensive tackle David Sanders of Charlotte. Cornerback Anquan Fagans of Alabaster, Alabama. Cornerback Caleb Lanier of Decatur, Georgia. In the 26th class, safety Zelus Hicks of Carrollton, Georgia. Running back Savion Hyder, Woodbury Forest, Virginia. Offensive tackle Maxwell Riley of Avon Lake, Ohio. Offensive tackle Ikine Oboko of Garner, North Carolina. Wide receiver Carnell Warren of Bluffton. Offensive tackle Donovan Johnson of Fayetteville, North Carolina. Offensive tackle Darius Gray of Richmond. Cornerback Smoke Matthews of Cornelius, North Carolina. Offensive tackle Desmond Green of Timberland. Offensive tackle Leo Delaney of Charlotte. We'll give you a few more notes after the break, and then we'll go just a bit outside with Jim Thoman. Be back in a moment. All right, Jim Thoman in just a moment. Let me wrap up recruiting for tonight's. Give you the players who were in at Clemson over the weekend. Had a few more in the 26 class. Running back Jalen McGill from Broome. 26 receiver Jordan Gidron of Ridgeview. 26 wide receiver Donovan Murph of Irmo. 26 defensive tackle Bryce Perry Wright of Buford, Georgia. Receiver Tyree King of Knoxville. Offensive tackle Zion Gillis of Carvers Bay. And Xavier Griffin of Gainesville, Georgia. Receiver Brody Keefe of Charlotte. Tight end Nayland Scott of Ackworth, Georgia. In the 27 class, linebacker Caden Henderson from Tampa. Offensive tackle Zaire Addison of Riverview, Florida, who has an official to Clemson on May 31st, has also set officials to Oregon June 7th and Florida State on June 21st. And he was to be at Clemson today for an unofficial visit. 26 offensive lineman Maxwell Riley of Avon Lake, Ohio, was at Clemson Saturday. He's going to go to Alabama March 19th, Michigan State April 2nd, Notre Dame April 6th, Ohio State to be determined. Quarterback Smoke Matthews, who was at Clemson Saturday, goes to NC State March 28th, Penn State the day after, Tennessee April 1st, West Virginia April 3rd, and Miami April 6th. Offensive tackle Josh Petty from Norcross, Georgia, plans to be at Clemson tomorrow. He'll also visit Georgia Tech, Georgia, Auburn, and Florida State this month. Clemson and USC are in the top six with linebacker Kamar Archie of Princeton, New Jersey. He was at Clemson Saturday, and the others on his list are Tennessee, Rutgers, Michigan, and Oklahoma. Clemson target safety Jordan Young, Monroe, North Carolina, has an official set with Tennessee June 21st. He also has one with Clemson May 31st and Florida State June 14th. New USC receivers coach Mike Furry confirmed the program's prior offer to 2026 receiver Jordan Gidron from Ridgeview. Gidron also picked up an offer from Georgia last week. USC offered 2026 receiver Gordon Sellers of Charlotte. USC target offensive lineman Isaac Sowells plans to visit Louisville tomorrow. Clemson and USC target defensive end Isaiah Gibson was offered by Arkansas. And Sumter defensive end Anthony Addison, he visited Florida State on Saturday. There you go. The recruiting report for tonight here on Sports Talk. Make sure you check it out on our website, sportstalksc.com. On Twitter, use the hashtag STRecruiting. Let's talk some baseball. How about it?
Just a bit outside. He tried the corner and missed.
Yeah, but you know what? One thing back in his day, throwing that 95-mile-an-hour cutter for the NC State Wolfpack, Jim Thoman was never, ever a bit outside. Coach, welcome in. How are you?
I was catching some 95-mile cutters. I don't think I was throwing any, but I was a Wolfpack catcher.
How hard did you throw it back? How hard, when you threw it back to the pitcher, how hard would you throw it?
Well, if they were throwing balls, I was throwing it back about as hard as they threw it in. And if they threw strikes, I would let up on it a little bit. But I was known to throw it back pretty hard just to get their attention.
I hear you. Okay, good weekend around the state. A lot of winning done by a lot of different teams. Coach McGuire got 500 wins at Upstate and Clemson and South Carolina sweep. And I think Coastal swept as well. They're all still well up in the rankings. Take it away. What you got in your Thoman tidbits tonight for us here on Sports Talk?
Thoman tidbits. I got to go quick because you cut me off.
Sorry about that. Sorry.
I got some good stuff. Got some good stuff on college baseball. It's a little bit early for RPI, but it is, I think we're a quarter away through the season. You play 56 regular season games in college baseball, and most teams have played about 15 games or so. So we're about 25% away in. Clemson's 2 in the RPI. Coastal's 31, and South Carolina's 34. If they can stay there, all three teams will be in a regional. But it's awful early, and it can change a lot. And when the SEC and ACC start cranking it up, then the RPIs go skyrocketing, so they have a built-in advantage. Right now, Clemson's number 2, and Arkansas, I think, is number 1 in the early RPI rankings. Clemson this week, 4-0. Beat Kansas State, and we're 3-0 versus UNCG. They're up to 13-1 on the year. Like I said, 2 in the RPI. As a freshman, Jaron Purifoy had 7 RBIs. Only played in 2 games, but ended up with 7 RBIs. So he's going to be a name to follow as the season progresses. He's just getting now a chance to get in there and had a really good weekend. And like you said, the Big 3, Clemson, USC, and Coastal, they went 14-0 for the week. So I think the people that are listening know how good college baseball is in the state. And the other teams are doing well as well. So I got to call in to old Coach Tanner to find out if that South Carolina game and the Clemson game has been finalized yet, the reschedule of the Friday game that got rained out. I don't know if you know that or not, Phil, but I'm working on that.
Yes, sir.
Clemson plays Manhattan Tuesday and Wednesday, and then they head to Duke. And Duke had a heck of a weekend. They beat Wake Forest 2 out of 3, and Duke moves up, I think, number 2 in some of the polls. So Duke is having a tremendous year. I really think Duke and Wake, both of them, are probably favorites right now to be in Omaha, but it's only, like we said, a quarter of the year done. But Clemson will get a big test. They play at 4-3-1. Friday, Saturday, Sunday up at Duke. It's a huge series against 2 top 10 teams. So that'll be fun for Clemson to go up there and see if they can beat the Dukies. South Carolina, great week. They're up to 13-3. Went 5-0, and any coach in America will sign for that. They beat the Citadel Davidson and 3-0 against Longwood. It might not be the top 25 schedule, but 5-0 is 5-0. And I'm sure Coach Kingston will take that. They're heading to Georgia State. They're playing in North Augusta tomorrow at the Pro Park down there at 7 p.m. If anyone's down in North Augusta, South Carolina, wants to catch a good college game tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. They also have to fly to Ole Miss when they get back from North Augusta and play in Georgia State. They have at Hottie Toddy, Ole Miss, for the weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So the grind has started for Clemson and South Carolina, and it literally is the grind. About every game that is played in the SEC, you can win or lose, and it's just, you got to be a really, really, really tough and mentally tough team to go through that grind, and we'll see who has the toughest teams. Coastal is had a great week. They're 5-0 for the week. They beat USC Upstate, who's a good squad. They beat them 2 straight games, Tuesday, Wednesday. Then they swept Michigan, which was Coach Bakich's former team. So Coastal's up to 14-2. Don't watch out for Gary Gilmore in his last year as a college coach. It looks like they're going to have a great year. I think they have a 13-game win streak going on right now. And tomorrow, talking about another great game in college, they go down. They're playing at Wake Forest tomorrow at 6 o'clock, and Wake Forest for the last 3 weeks has been number 1 in the country. So another big game for Coastal. And then Coastal this weekend, they'll have JMU for 3 games. Another tidbit for Coastal, Blake Barthel, sophomore second baseman, had a crazy week. I think he went 7 for 12, hit .600, .739 on-base percentage. And he had 5 or 6 home runs. Someone's going to have to fact check me on that one. But 13, he had a heck of a week, and it's probably probably won some national awards. You're looking at 5 or 6 home runs, 13 RBIs. Another tidbit of Coastal there, 3rd in the nation in freebies. And what I mean by that, Phil, is hit by pitches and walks. When you add them together, okay, they do a ratio with the number of strikeouts, and they're plus 48. I think they're tied 2nd nationally with that ratio, plus 48. but 23% of their plate appearances have ended in walks or hit by pitches, which is absolutely incredible. And, you know, you got to teach that. And Coastal does a great job of working with their hitters, but they get on base a quarter of the time. A quarter of their plate appearances have been either walks or hit by pitches, and they played a good schedule. So it isn't like they're playing teams that are real wild or anything. They're earning that. So
let me insert this. Let me insert this while you're talking about that. What about South Carolina in their game? I think it was Saturday. 18 walks they drew, and I think they were hit three times.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would say this, that college baseball in general, there's 305 teams. I'm saying that we have a problem with command and control of our pitchers. In general, there's a lot of good pitchers, a lot of guys throwing really hard. I think we have a lot of velocity in college baseball, but we do not have the pitchability and the command of the baseball and the command of the strike zone that we should have. And I'm not sure why. I have a few thoughts on that we can get into later. But I think kids, they're growing up now, worried too much about the velocity and the running guns and throwing the ball as hard as they can, and they don't learn how to pitch. So, you know, some of the scores are so high, and it's because we just have, you know, we're just walking way too many people. Mm-hmm. Anyway, let's go on to we talked about Coastal playing Wake Forest. Let's go to College of Charleston. They went 3-1 for the week. They beat a good Liberty team, and then they won the series versus Penn. So Coach Holbrook's squad is up to 10-4 for the year. So they're hanging in there. Wofford has won 6 in a row. They're 12-2. They do have a big weekend series at College of Charleston this weekend. So if anyone's in Charleston, 4-2-1, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you get to see some good in-state baseball. Wofford at College of Charleston. Presbyterian won 3 straight. They're 10-6. It seems like Coach Pollock's teams, they always seem to play you tough. No matter, they might not be going 56-0 anytime soon, but they always play tough. And he's got them right there at 10-6 right now, and they've won 3 in a row. USC Upstate, congratulations to Mike for having 500 wins. That's incredible. They've also won 3 straight. They lost 2 to Coastal midweek, but then they won on the weekend. So they're 9-7 right now. And it seems like Coach McGuire's teams always hit them home runs too. Charleston Southern is hanging in there. They went 1-1 in midweek versus Penn, 1-2 against Samford for the weekend, which is a good program. And they had the College of Charleston on Tuesday, and that's a big rivalry game, Charleston Southern at College of Charleston Tuesday night at 6 p.m. So that'll be another big game for Coach Holbrook down there. Winthrop got 2 games rained out this year, and then they split 1-1 with App State, so they went 1-1 for the week. They're 6-8 right now. I got to get this crazy year upset. Xavier beat LSU, if you can believe that. St. Mary's, I believe that's California, beat Fort.
Ooh.
Austin Peay beat Auburn. And earlier in the year, they beat Mississippi State, so something's going on at the Peay. Kent State beat Kentucky, and I think that's, again, so Kent State, I think earlier in the year, they beat Clemson. So some of these mid-majors are making a move, looks like. There's a good and bad shout-out here for the women of South Carolina basketball team, and I'm sure you probably talked about it. Obviously, the women's fight is not smart, doesn't look good, just my take. That's all I have on that. I hope it doesn't cost them anything in the tournament. The good part of that is they're 32-0, and it's just a great program. It's not a good look with the fight. But 32-0, they're talking about having a tremendous season. So, shout out to them for the 32-0 and winning the SEC. Another home run, another ejection. Tennessee's Blake Burke hit a home run and crossed home plate. Said something to the catcher. Not sure what he said. He got thrown out of the game. I guess the home run counted, but it seems like we've had quite a bit of home runs. And the guys can't behave themselves to get into the dugout. And the umpires are starting to throw them out. Of course, Tennessee Chris Village and Vitello have done a really good job there, but they kind of – they're known to push the envelope in regards to fair play and a little bush league at times, but they certainly played really, really hard. And I don't know what was said, but he did get he got tossed out of the game after hitting a big home run. Okay. Let me see what else we got here.
We got about a minute, Coach. Got about a minute.
All right. Okay. I'll do this. Hold on. Let's go. Duke. I'm going to say Duke and Wake are probable Omaha teams. Give it up for Duke winning 2 out of 3 against Wake, number one team, and Duke shot up to number 2 in the country. Shout out to Miami. They came back from 9 to beat UVA and won 2 out of 3. And then a shout out to Florida's Jack Caglione. He's the next Shohei Ohtani. The guy's like 6'7", but he's left. Two-way guy, probably the top two-way guy in the country. Through 6 innings, 9 Ks, no hits. So we'll have our hands full when we face Mr. Caglione against Florida. But anyway, another crazy week for college baseball. Loving what's going on. I'll have more info on Toman Tidbits next week. Same time, same bat channel, same guru, Phil Kornblut. You guys have a great week.
All right, Coach. We can't
wait. Coach.
Great stuff. Great stuff. Thank you so much. Appreciate that, Coach Jim Toman. Just a bit outside here on Sports
Talk.
He was
right about Blake Barthel hit 6 home runs this past week for Coastal, including 3 in their Saturday blowout of Michigan, and he also hit a grand slam this week.
Mm.
And I believe he also said the Coastal Wake game tomorrow night is in Winston-Salem. It's actually in Conway tomorrow night.
It's in Conway.
So that,
okay.
Yeah. They will have pretty close to full house, I would think, tomorrow night at Springsbrook Stadium.
Going back to that USC game, I think it was the Saturday game. Or maybe it was a Sunday game.
I had no idea they had that many walks.
They had 18 walks. How about having to sit through this game if you're a fan? They had 18 walks. They had an inning in which they scored 11 runs. Probably took an hour to play the inning. That's miserable baseball right there, boys and girls. Miserable baseball. Okay, Smitty.
Smitty probably played in several of those over his career.
He was probably the deliverer of many a walk back in his day. He couldn't control the curve. Like Coach Toman was saying, that guy's having trouble with their control in college baseball. Smitty, take us to the audio you've got from yesterday at the SEC Women's Championship.
Yeah, just quickly, just a reminder, we'll go back to what we talked about in the first hour. Remember, the atmosphere for this game, to set all of this up between LSU and South Carolina, was an absolute powder keg. And eventually, Angel Reese and some physical play set the fuse. This was a matchup between the last two national champions. And to go back, you know, the Gamecocks were coming off that heart-stopping win, the buzzer beater over Camila Cardoso. LSU was dealing with a lot of emotions. They had a lot of injured players, including last-tier Powell, who had suffered a scary concussion, and the players worried about her, and they took her off in a stretcher. So all of this is playing out in front of a capacity crowd at the Bonsecours Wellness Arena. And then, of course, you've got the fact that LSU thinks they're flat-out disrespected nationally because they're the defending champs, but the Gamecocks get the pub because they're the number one team. So I was one of the few reporters that was there for both press conferences in person for every minute of each of those, and I watched Don Staley's comments on the floor on the monitor. So I thought the best way to help tell this story and put a bow on the SEC championship is to share the clips that have been dancing around in my head. So here they are. You'll hear from Angel Reese, USC guard Tahina Pau-Pau, as she describes the heartbreak of celebrating with half the team in the locker room. But we'll start right after the game with Dawn Staley on the court moments after the buzzer.
I want to apologize for us playing a part in that, because that's not who we are and that's not what we're about.
I'll take responsibility for what happened from our side of it, which is we talk about these things as a team. And we try to, as much as possible, express to them how not to react in those type of situations.
We're not scared of South Carolina, and I'm going to repeat that. We're not scared of South Carolina. And a lot of people are scared of them,
And we came in and battled and battled and battled and battled and battled to the end. And of course, we came up short, but we'll see him again.
It was heartbreaking. You know, we couldn't have done it without them. I mean, we're a team for a reason. We're a family, and it was really hard for us. Just a lot of emotions, and we really wanted them to celebrate with us. You know, we're a team. We're gonna bounce back from that and learn from our mistakes.
No one wants to see that ugliness, but I can tell you this: I wish she would have pushed Angel Reese. Don't push a kid that you 6'8". Don't push somebody that little. That was uncalled for, in my opinion. Let those two girls that were jawing, let them go at it.
I'm going to say this. Fly J came to me after the game, right after the game, and she just apologized and said she's not that type of player. And I really appreciate that. There's something that somebody won't ever hear if I didn't say anything. And she's not. She's a really good person. Things just got escalated.
Do you realize there was only one foul called on each team with 2 minutes to play in the fourth quarter? Are you kidding me? That might have created some of that. Not the way we play. We're going to foul your ass. Not the way they play. They're going to foul your ass. But you only blew that whistle one time? Think about that now.
I want to thank the officials and everybody that jumped in and just kind of calmed the situation down. And then the penalties were what they were. Like, they were well within the rules of ejecting the players that left the bench. Even if they just stepped over the line of the bench, you can't. You have to sit there and keep your composure.
We didn't have any ejections. They had an ejection. They told me Cardoza was the only one ejected for fighting.
I don't know if we're the best team in the country. I know there's a ranking that says we're number one, but I think that's subjective. LSU is really good.
We're in a good spot. Angel is right. We're playing some pretty good basketball right now, and that's just the God's truth. But we'll have everybody back. Everybody's good to go. So the NCAA, you don't need to call me and ask if Michaela Williams is good. You don't need to ask me if Angel Reese is good. You don't need to ask me about Poa. She's only in concussion protocol.
And while I'm at it, I really hope that last tier Poa is okay. I know she's was back at the hotel. I hope she gets healthy quickly because she makes them better.
We did whatever it took to win, and sadly we came up short, but I'm happy where we are right now, and anybody seeing us moving forward should be scared.
So this is the biggest lesson that any of our teams have to experience.
Great piece, Smitty. That's excellent.
Indeed.
And anybody know why? Smitty, you might. Chris, you might. But, okay, so the players were ejected from the game. And they leave, and they go to their respective locker rooms. All right? Game is played out the last 2 minutes. Game is over. That game is over and done with, right? Over. So why couldn't the players for South Carolina come back out on the court and celebrate the post game? Because that's not the game. Game's over. History. Marked up. This is post game. This is afterwards. It's a different thing. Why were they not allowed to come back out and be with their team? Anybody know?
I don't. Maybe Smitty does, because it makes no sense to me.
Well, I don't know specifically, but I'm just guessing that when they have circumstances like this, I'm simply guessing that they are barred from returning to the floor, and the celebration is an extension of not of the game, but of an NCAA event. And they do that, I assume, so that they can keep all parties in the locker room. You know, after a pro wrestling match, you know, you can't have Hulk Hogan and The Rock back in the same room. You just got to keep them separate.
Now, what is Kim Mulkey? What did she think her players, did they just left the building because they wanted to? She honestly said, we didn't have anybody ejected. Well, why did she think her players, who the majority of them were never going to get into the game anyway, is obvious. But nonetheless, the players that left the bench, what did she think? They just were asked politely, hey, by the way, just go back to your locker room, please. You're not ejected like the South Carolina players are. What is she talking about?
The reason I wanted to put that in there is because Kim Mulkey is really parsing language here. Those players were removed, but only Cardoso was ejected for fighting. But you know what? I put that in there because to me, what I heard, and I wanted to share the clip, not just give my opinion. My opinion was Mulkey
put her players in a position where she told them to fight, scratch, and claw, and then she took no responsibility for the situation escalating. And to me, that played out in her comments right there.
Guys, Charleston's on the ropes in their game against Towson. They're down 55-49, 2:40 to go in the game. In this semifinal CAA. Yeah, boy, it would be a shame, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would.
That was 55-52. Okay, thank you, Smitty. And thank you, Chris. Thank you, Josh.
Yes,
thank you, everybody, for being with us. We'll see you tomorrow night. A lot of good stuff tomorrow. See you then.